Coming up today, why does the FCC want to collect employees' personal data?
The Biden administration is consistently demonstrating its disdain, really, for the rule of law and saying that, well, this might be illegal, but if you don't stop me, we're going to do it.
Then, how do we reach young men for Christ? We'll hear about the Men of Honor program.
Our lives are short, and we have an opportunity to disciple and influence young men in a godly way, just as Jesus did with his 12 disciples.
Also, we'll look at the lies Americans believe and how to stand firmly on the Word of God.
And that's where we are in society today. People are beyond the point of seeing what is right and what is wrong, what's good and what is evil.
It's the weekend of May 18th and 19th. I'm Jeff Chambly, and this is The Stand Radio. Protecting our personal information, like medical information or financial information, is something that we learn to do early on as adults. The reason is because information is power, and not everyone has our best interests at heart. The Federal Communications Commission is reviving a policy that allows it to collect employee data for its own purposes. Now, why do they want this information, and what do they intend to do with it? Joining me is Abraham Hamilton III, General Counsel for AFA, to explain that. Hi, Abe.
How you doing, Jeff?
Tell us what's going on over at the FCC.
Yeah, as you've described it, the FCC has decided to resurrect a policy that they attempted in the 80s and the 90s to require all broadcasters, that would be television and radio broadcasters in the country, commercial stations and non-commercial stations, to collect demographic data for all of their employees and to include it in its public online station file, which will allow third parties, outsiders, anybody to see this pertinent personal information for broadcasters. In the 80s and 90s, the FCC tried this, unsurprisingly, under Democrat presidents, and the courts rebuked them as unlawful invasions of privacy, violations of equal protection under the 14th Amendment, Section 1. However, the Biden administration has gone a step further. They're not only attempting to resurrect the data collection, but they're adding an additional category of data collection where they're requiring broadcasters, just like American Family Radio, to communicate whether or not we have gender non-conforming employees and how many of them we do have, and to specifically do so to allow outside groups to put pressure upon us to capitulate to the Biden administration's really, you know, obsession with the LGBTQIAP plus sexual deviancy social political agenda. So the ultimate objective, and this is not merely my opinion, this was stated by Biden administration officials during the deliberation stage before this regulation was made public, finally, that they want to use this regulation to force organizations to use hiring practices for people of the LGBTQ persuasion that they prefer. This is a part of the Biden administration's administration-wide mandate to look for every area they can advance the LGBT agenda, and that is what they're doing through this regulation.
So, in effect, the government is simply opening the door and allowing third parties to take advantage of that federal open door, then to create pressure. Give us a scenario on how that might be used against ministries like AFR.
That's exactly what they endeavor to do. Okay. And what they want to do is use the online station file publication process to pick out who they believe are winners or losers in terms of the broadcast community, and say, these are the bad guys. It's kind of the broadcast version of the SPLC hate list.
Wow, that's scary. So this is the part of their overall DEI initiative toward corporations and other entities?
That's exactly right. It's a part of their overall commitment. And this is what the Biden administration, this is what they said coming in, that they would look for every opportunity, every context, every environment to advance this agenda, regardless of what the citizenry thinks, regardless of what the employers think, you know. And this is why the Founding Fathers warned us against having an expansive, overreaching government.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because one of the things that we see is that government always tends to expand. And the very fact that there were courts that said no to the federal government 20 years ago, it seems that the Biden administration could care less what the courts say. They are bound and determined to push every envelope, to break every rule until someone stops them.
Does it sound familiar? I mean, mean, the same thing happened with the rent moratorium when the Biden administration told private property owners that they could not collect rent for their property through the CDC. The same thing with the student loan cancellation. The Biden administration had attorneys in their own administration saying that this is illegal, but they pressed forward with it anyway. This is something that's happened over and over and over again, and okay. The Biden administration is consistently demonstrating its disdain, really, for the rule of law and saying that, well, this might be illegal, but if you don't stop me, we're going to do it.
Yep.
So this is why we have filed a lawsuit to invite the courts to stop them, the same way we had to sue the Biden administration against their vaccine mandate, you know, to where they were attempting to tell American Family Association that we had to require our employees to get the vaccines, you know, regardless of their prerogatives. And we had to sue the Biden administration to stop that, which thankfully we won. Here we are again, suing our own federal government.
Okay, so you brought the suit before the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is based in New Orleans.
That's right.
A fairly conservative court. So when do you expect to have a decision, or where is this going to go from here?
Yeah, so we filed in the Fifth Circuit because that governs where we're located, you know. We're not forum shopping. That's just where we are. That's where we had to file. We're grateful to God that it is a law-abiding constitutionalist circuit court. Following our lawsuit, having filed ours, it gives real potential for the priority to be in the Fifth Circuit, to where our filing will govern where this matter will be litigated ultimately. But because there's such a wide swath of litigation all over the country, they're kind of entered now a circuit court lottery system to determine which circuit will be the lead circuit in handling this particular issue. We're hopeful and we're expecting the Fifth Circuit to ultimately be the venue where this matter will be held, but that remains to be seen. Once the circuit determination is made, litigation will proceed there. It is noteworthy because this is a federal regulation. We get to bypass the district court level and go straight to the appellate circuit, which would expedite the process if necessary to where the Supreme Court would hear it in short order.
I want you to speak to one more thing, because not everybody is a member of a broadcast entity. We're not radio owners, TV station owners, but there is a danger in giving too much information when it is asked of us on a form, whether it's from an employee or from the federal government. Could you speak to that just a moment? And because a lot of people think, you know, there's really no harm in this, it's just innocent information, but it may be used against them in some way.
It certainly can be used against them. You know, we have a pretty significant amount of employees, so this would be putting our employees' information within the federal government apparatus for them to publicize, frankly, for personal, private employees to have their personal information publicized publicly simply because of where they work. Yeah. You know, that is an invasion of privacy, and that is a violation of equal protection under the laws. But in addition to that, it could provide a roadmap and a blueprint for the government to expand its operations using the massive, I call it the Leviathan state, through the alphabet agencies, to get more and more access to the private information of everyday American citizens, because that is ultimately what this would come down to. It would be using the regulation to force us as an employer to require our staff members to provide their pertinent personal information for government usage for whatever purposes they deem fit, in addition to trying to compel AFR to capitulating to the DEI sexual deviancy social political agenda.
Yeah.
It would be private persons having their information bantied about within the public discourse.
Yeah. Okay. Abraham Hamilton III, General Counsel for AFA. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
In an age where masculinity is ridiculed and the effects of fatherlessness are seen everywhere, a lot of opportunities exist to make a positive difference in a boy's life. That's the goal behind the Men of Honor program that began in 2018 here at the American Family Association. AFA Vice President Wesley Weilman is heading that up and is here to tell us what kind of effect that's having. Wesley, welcome to the program.
Hey, glad to be on. Thank you for this opportunity.
You know, AFA normally deals with moral and cultural issues on the national level. This is unique. Where did the idea come from for a face-to-face in-person ministry like this?
Yeah, so while AFA is a national ministry as far as getting the message out, we believe here on campus and on site here that to have the most impact, the longer impact would be to do things on a local level.
Okay.
So we like to take the message of AFA nationally and encourage people to do so on a local level. But in order to do that, you also need to lead by example.
Yeah.
And so being moved in that way to be an example locally of what other people can do in their community. So
yeah,
we host here a Men of Honor at AFA at our headquarters every summer.
Okay. Well, this began back in 2018. Tell us what a typical meeting looks like. So when you get together, what does that look like?
Well, we all know that over food, people enjoy, it tends to lead to good conversation and good fellowship. For Christians, that's a good opportunity to fellowship and disciple. And so we like to start our afternoons with food.
Okay.
We'll mix in games, too. We'll have a basketball goal, and we'll have some cornhole. And for those that aren't in the South, cornhole is not a type of food. It is a game. But we like to add games and food to start with. And then afterwards, we move over to our Bible time. And so we'll have a local youth pastor.
Okay.
Or even sometimes we'll have someone who is a really good Bible teacher, but their occupation is maybe they cut hair or they are barbershop. And so we'll have people that are really good Bible teachers from different vocations. They'll come. They'll teach on a particular topic that we have already picked out that we've asked them to prepare for that we know will best impact this group of young men. And then afterwards from there, we'll have a few minutes of discussion time where we have table counselors that lead that. And then afterwards, the second half of our evening, we will have a skill that that we'll begin to teach the young men to do. And it could be anything from yard maintenance to car maintenance to physical exercise. These are the types of different skills that we'll teach. Then in addition to that, my mom will often end the summer with an etiquette class. And so between etiquette and all the above, everything that you would hope to get out of, now we have to squeeze it in. It's a summer program, but it's things that you would hope to get out of a godly dad or a granddad or somebody, a godly man that would influence a young man's life. That's what we hope to give.
Yeah, so this is this a meeting that lasts 2 or 3 hours, once a week, something like that for a few weeks?
It's about 2 hours.
Okay.
And the program is set up for a 9-week course in the summer. That would be 8 weeks of the Men of Honor, and then the ninth meeting would be a graduation ceremony.
Okay.
And that's how we've used it in the past. However, the beauty of this is it's flexible in the sense that don't let the number of weeks keep you from getting involved, because I know some local communities and churches that did it over a Christmas break for 4 weeks, and they just picked the first 4 weeks. Mm. And they did the first 4 weeks, and then they did a graduation ceremony, and they moved on. And so it can be used in different ways, and you can stretch it out over a longer period of time. I just want to inspire people and encourage people that our lives are short, and we have an opportunity to disciple and influence young men in a godly way, just as Jesus did with his 12 disciples. And I want to encourage people that you can do that no matter how busy you are. I've got a fairly busy schedule. I've got 3 kids, all under 8. They're all involved in activities and entertainment, and we've got Christian education. We've got a lot of things going on, but we make time during the summer, because if you think about it, it's really not as much as you think as far as time spent with the young men. So.
Well, I know people will want to replicate this in their communities if they're listening. And the good news is there is a Men of Honor curriculum that's available. It's a free 16-page downloadable file that's available at resources.afa.net. Tell us about this curriculum, what's in it, and how can people use it?
Yes, it took a couple, probably 2 years to finally get this done. It's not... it's like you said, it's only 16 pages, but I just put it off. I just kept putting it off, What happened was I was sending people my notes when they were asking. And the more I did that, it was quick and easy, just copy and paste and emailed it.
Yeah.
But then after a time period, I realized that this needs to be a little bit more professionalized and provide a little more detailed instructions.
Okay.
Because that's what people were asking for. I found myself getting on the phone and answering more questions than I could have just put in a curriculum. So praise the Lord, we finally got a curriculum. It's like you said, it's 16 pages. However, it is very detailed. Now, for someone who is an extrovert that just can grab something and go, you may not need all of it. But for those that are like, oh, I don't know, how do I even begin? It even backs up and tells you what you need to tell the table counselors, their expectations, what you hope to get from their participation.
That's good.
It even gives the 5 bullet points of that. So it is as detailed or as simple as you want. It can be an outline, or you can follow it word for word. So it walks you through how to begin one as far as reaching out and getting volunteers. It tells you how to, it even gives an outline of minute by minute how much time you need to prepare for eating and games, and how much you need to prepare for Bible time. And
it's like a VBS curriculum. Almost. It lays out the schedule and the plan and everything.
And it's week, and it gives you week one all the way through week nine.
That's good.
So it's,
that's good.
Again, it's very organized, very detailed, and so I'm looking forward to that. If I could, I'd like to read the mission statement of Men of Honor. It says at the front, the mission of Men of Honor is to teach young men ages 7 to 17 to become godly men. To accomplish this mission, young men will be taught the scriptures as well as necessary life skills, such as how to change a flat tire, apply for a job, how to become a gentleman, and even craftsman skills and much more. So we're I'm just thankful that AFA is not only committed to the national level, but even more so on the local level. And once we began to do this and people were asking about it, I wanted to make sure that we had this available. And to my knowledge, and I have not asked for a poll, and I have not done a lot of hard trying to figure out who's using it and who's not. But however, just from common knowledge of people interacting with me, there's over a dozen communities and or churches who are participating in this each summer. So
that's great. You know, a lot of these national problems, though, Wesley, can be solved at the local level.
Absolutely.
If communities will get involved, churches will get involved, it does make a national difference. So
does.
This is a great program. All right, so once again, the 16-page downloadable file of the Men of Honor curriculum is available at resources.afa.net.
Amen.
We encourage you to go there, check that out. And Wesley, thanks so much for stopping by and explaining this great program.
You're welcome. And just a reminder, for those that live within driving distance of Tupelo, at our headquarters, we're going to host ours, Men of Honor, this summer. And it begins June 4th. And it's going to go through July 2nd this year. So it'll be 5 weeks this year for travel reasons and other things. But if you live within, we've had somebody drive within up to 45 minutes to be a part of it. Their grandmother brought them last year. So awesome. If you live within drive distance, we'd love to have you here.
All right, love to see them. All right, thanks, Wesley.
Thank you.
Christians understand that human nature is fallen and sinful, and that means that we are prone to deceive and to falling for deception. But how do we respond when lies and deception become the main characteristics of our institutions and culture? Pastor John Amanchukwu has taken that subject head on in his new book, Hoodwinked, 10 Lies Americans Believe. He's a preacher, author, and activist whose passion for the next generation pours out on audiences nationwide, and he's been heard many times here on American Family Radio. Welcome, Pastor.
Thank you so much for having me on.
You know, lies are nothing new. All we have to do is look back to the Garden of Eden. What makes today's culture different from what we've seen in times past?
Well, I believe that the lies that we are hearing today are even the more cloaked in parts of truth. You know, it was once said that rat poison is 99% good ingredients, but it's the 1% that will kill you. The title of my new book, entitled Hoodwinked, that term is an old fogey and or antiquated term, but what it meant archaically is that for an individual to be at the position where they are beyond blindfolded, consider a piece of cloth around someone's eye to the point that they can't see anything at all. So they're beyond blindfolded, or they have a hood over their head. And that's where we are in society today. People are beyond the point of seeing what is right and what is wrong, what's good and what is evil.
Yeah. You cover a lot of contemporary issues in your book. You focus on, the 10 lies. I want to focus on a couple of lies that seem to be leading the pack. Number one, America is a racist nation. We've heard that everywhere. What about that lie?
Well, first and foremost, when you consider even the current border crisis, We have 10 million criminal illegal aliens that have come into our country since 2020. I don't call them asylum seekers or newcomers.
Yeah.
They are criminal illegal aliens. However, there's a browning of America that has taken place. And when you consider the number of blacks and brown people who are trying to get into this country, one has to come to the realization that why are people fighting to get into America if America is such a racist nation? America even has also given us our first black president. And in order for Barack Hussein Obama to get elected, it required many of white people to vote for him. You know, blacks make up only 13% of the American population. So therefore, in order for him to win, he had to have support from whites. But I will also say this, that those who seek to label America as a racist nation are people who have issues with our Constitution, people who are anti-God, people who are pro-Hamas, and people who are anti-Israel. Oftentimes have these viewpoints, people who support black liberation theology, who believe that America was founded in 1619 instead of 1776. These are the people who want to tarnish America and label it as a racist nation.
One of the other lies that you deal with also, and this is somewhat related to that, is dealing with abortion, something that you continue to speak out against in your ministry. That is that being pro-life is only for white evangelicals. Why is that a common perception in the black community?
Because if you are pro-life, then one might think that you have an evangelical worldview. You know, and the Bible speaks expressly on the topic of abortion. We have this thing called the Ten Commandments that they have removed from the public square and the public sector. But number six says, thou shalt not murder. Proverbs chapter 6, verses 16 through 19 gives us seven things that God calls abominable, one of which is the shedding of innocent blood. And so there are people who would tell you that if you are pro-life, then you're therefore a Republican. Well, first and foremost, everyone should value life. Regardless of political party, you should value life. But there is one particular political party today that is supporting abortion on demand and infanticide, and that is the Democrat Party. And if you are black like me and you go around saying that you are pro-life, they even label people as like me as being an individual who is supporting a white evangelical worldview. And I disagree with that because being pro-life is first and foremost biblical.
Yeah, there are a lot of people, Pastor, who want to minister to women at abortion clinics, but they would face the accusation that, well, you're not black, you don't deserve a seat at the table, or you don't qualify to have an opinion in this issue. How do people deal with that criticism and respond?
That's an unfair criticism. You know, when you love your fellow brothers and sisters in Christ, whether they are caught in sin or in error or in a fault, you should do what's necessary to support them beyond pigmentation. Skin tone shouldn't matter. However, I have to point out that oftentimes when you go to abortion clinics around this country, nearly 70% of the time, you will see that 70% of the people outside of the abortion clinics trying to save the babies are white, but the majority of the babies who are being aborted and killed are black. That's another thing that points towards this notion of America being a racist nation.
Right.
If America is such a racist nation, why are white people by and large trying to save black babies?
You know, one of the frustrating trends that's related to that is the lack of civil debate. And that's just one illustration of that topic. You know, have we passed the point of no return in that? Or do you think that we can regain some kind of respectful disagreement in our discourse with one another?
I think that we need to get back to the point where we move from trying to enable people, coddle people, scratch ears, to telling people what thus saith the Lord, and working with the intent of mending people back together with truth. I do think that a healthy debate is necessary, even in the church, even amongst political parties, as it relates to these issues. However, when you disagree with many people on the left, they label you as a homophobe, as a bigot, as a racist or maybe even as a white supremacist if you disagree with them. And so you can't have a fruitful, pragmatic, and beneficial conversation if, when we disagree, a person takes their ball and they go home and they tarnish the other person and call them names.
So Christians should simply disregard those criticisms and press forward with biblical truth. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, essentially we should. You know, we know that the darkness is against the light. We know that we're fighting issues of good versus evil. And so, yes, Christians need to do what's necessary to have the endurance to overcome the objections, all of the lies, even when you consider what's going on in our college campuses today, where people are shouting death to America and death to whites and burning down the American flag and tearing down monuments and statues. You know, even in the face of that, we still must be the hands and the feet of Jesus, and we must do what's necessary to be the Good Samaritan.
Pastor, where can people find out more about you and follow the work that you do and perhaps get a copy of the book?
Yes, you can go to iknowgod.us. That's iknowgod.us, or go to Amazon and pick up a copy there. Thank you so much for your support. Follow me on social media at REVWU Truth. And keep in mind that as I travel this country, even going to school board meetings and speaking out against diversity, equity, and inclusion and critical race theory, that I need your support. Pray for me, but also help fund this movement, because we're fighting for the soul of our nation. And there is no one that is being impacted in the manner that most are, like our children. Yes. Our children are being corrupted and destroyed by Satan, and only truth can remove them from the enemy's paw.
Pastor John Amanchukwu, thank you for your courage and your boldness. It is contagious, and we appreciate that. And we will pray for you as you continue your ministry. Once again, the name of the book, Hoodwinked, 10 Lies Americans Believe, by our guest, Pastor John Amanchukwu. Pastor, thank you so much for joining us.
God bless you. Thank you.
Next week, it is Memorial Day weekend, and we'll spend some time remembering our fallen heroes with author and speaker Tom Saleo. We'll also hear from historian Stephen McDowell about how America's monuments point to our national Christian heritage. Today's guest and resource information can be found on our podcast page at afr.net. For the latest articles on culture, faith, and family, we encourage you to get your free 6-month trial subscription to The Stand magazine at afa.net/The Stand. You can also sign up for The Stand daily email. Thanks for making time to be with us today, and join us next time here on The Stand Radio.